I talked to my shipper.
Okay.
You also talked too much.
Okay, I got that up. Recording a Zoom session. Known as a couple people that I'm missing today. Now, the monitor. Turn on the monitor. Okay. Should do that so you guys can teach in duplicate tabs. Okay. Welcome to Tuesday. April. Welcome to Thursday. Okay. Geez, I'm still stuck on Tuesday. Okay. Thursday. April. I'll look at my calendar. April 7th. Okay. And I gave you another assignment, which is my favorite one, to do some more questions for me. I think this really helps you guys study and prepare for the exams. People did better on the second exam. And without any evidence, I will attribute it to you guys doing your homework questions. So do them. I got another set of little lectures up till today's. So that's due in a week. And then it's getting towards the end of the semester. So I've laid out what I think will be the rest of the schedule, including I want to have one more exam on April 28th, which is the week before the last week of class. And then that'll give us time to go over that the last week of class. And then you can have the final exam on May 10th. And I got it at 1 p.m. Central time. And we got an assignment today, maybe one or possibly two more, I'll see. But, and I did that. And then I did, with some help from Fred Reamer, generate in Blackboard the average exams and assignment scores, which are weighted 50% each. And then I created another one that summarizes the overall grades. And we can talk about the test questions. I think everybody that had them, no one's here, just don't need to take the test. I saw everybody, but I think one person dropped. There were four people that were still kind of below a C. So if you're one of them, I can help you. Please come to my office hours. We, you know, some people are kind of borderline on their grades. So if you're within a couple percentage points, you know, of the cutoff of 60, 70, 80, 90%, particularly 70, 80, 90, you know, yes, where it will likely change or could change. So if you're just above the grade, you got to keep working hard. And if you're just a little bit below, you got to work a little bit harder. And so they can change, but it's pretty hard to change a whole letter grade. But there were 8 or 9 C's on the exam, 14 or 15 B's, 8 or so A's. No one got 100%. I know I went back and I looked at the duplicate questions and I saw there was a couple of them, but I had a couple of different answers that I saw. So if you have some issues with that, we can talk about it, but I think I'm just gonna leave it as the percentage. And I'm sorry it gives you the percentage, but you can calculate it. I think out of the 70, I did calculate it here, but we don't want to know. And then I also open up the exam so you can look at the questions now. Yes.
This third exam, is that going to be comprehensive overall, like from the first, second, and then obviously what we're learning now, or is it just from the third, second, or actually the third?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. I think I'm going to weight it a little bit more towards the latter half. Kind of like this is maybe it'd be the second and the third.
And then is the final exam going to be equally comprehensive over all three?
Yeah, it's going to be equally comprehensive over all three of them. And so I'm thinking maybe by that time I'll get to 100 questions, you know, 1 point a piece, equally kind of weighted over the exam. So if you don't know any of the concepts and the stuff, look at the old questions and make sure you understand the answers. And I can go over a couple of them. I could pull up, unless you have, you can go, should be able to go back now. Can people get in there and look at your answers and everything in Blackboard, since you all got computers. I can pull it up myself, but I don't want to because then I always risk the thing of showing other people's grades if I go in the wrong section. There was a couple of them that I remember. There was the terminal velocity one for the ice and water, and I said that they're both about 1 millimeter, 1 micron, whatever it was. Did I say 1 micron? Mm-hmm. 1 millimeter. And the answers are orders of magnitude higher or lower or about the same. So the answer is about the same. Yes, the ice falls a little bit slower, but not an order of magnitude different. Then go back and look at the curves. The very small droplets fall a lot smaller. That's why I had to say that this is about the same size. There was the other one about the entrainment that maybe confused you with my word in. The idea is entrainment happens at outside of the crowds or near the edge of the crowds. And that's where you generate kind of the downdrafts that come there. So it's not a phenomenon of the core of the crowd. It doesn't really penetrate in there until the whole crowd dies. And it doesn't generate updrafts, it generates a downdraft. So the density wording might have been a little bit confusing, but look at the end of that sentence. And then go back and look at the density stuff that we talked about. I think I had that right. Sure. So I think everybody, most people did well. You know, there's nothing wrong with C's. And so I don't consider this necessarily the easiest class. So, you know, rather when I was a student, I'd rather take a hard class and get a lower grade than an easy class. You want to learn stuff. So hopefully you're learning stuff. And B's, you know, a lot of people getting B's. So, and sometimes people maybe are not challenged enough to get all the answers right. So, we'll just work very hard, but I try to keep an interest in for that. So are there any other questions, concepts? We can talk later offline too. Like to talk after class, but that doesn't work for you, just send me an email and we can set that up. I'm seeing a bunch of blank stares. And I'm gonna try to get through these topics that are listed, but I won't quite make it because I'm just gonna talk today about seating. Seating agents or seating materials. So I don't know if I can hit every one of these, but you know, maybe we'll have to have you know, some flight safety and crowd side stuff combined with some of the other stuff after the exam. So and then I don't know, like record keeping, daily operations, Dan Burtis is going to come and he'll probably talk a lot about daily operations. So that might be a quick review for what I have to say about that. So with our classes canceled and stuff, it's tight to get everything covered, but we're, I think we'll get 95, 99% there, so on that. Other questions? So assignment due next week, go over these lectures on that. And go back and review the questions from the previous exam. And I will. And then if you have to miss the April 28th exam, talk to me and we'll have to make it up probably on the following Tuesday. Because I want to talk about it on May 4th and make sure we discuss it and have that. So, okay, that's the plan. That's the semester. Okay, and let me see here. How about some videos? Did I show you? I think I showed you the loop for the radar. Did we talk about this one? I forget. Oh yeah, it's this one here. Can I get to that loop? Come on. I guess not. I used to have a video. Oh, these are just myths. So I can review what we talked about last week and the stuff for the thing. We have the overview of the fog abatement, get rid of the fog. So that's actually one of the more, at least for the super cool fog, one of the more proven ones, but it's not done too often, but it is done. The suppression of lightning and modification of hurricanes are not done anywhere that I know of. And they don't have much research that has been done on them. So that's the takeaway on them. The one that we didn't talk about somewhat is suppression of heavy rains and downpours. There's some interest in that, so to talk about. But again, most of them all involves the technique of using AGI. The most well-researched and strongest support is the orographical crowd seeding over the mountains. It's got the most research, a lot of operations, probably the most well-studied, used, accepted method. And then probably rain enhancements next, and then hail suppression. Have a little bit less. So, and then I just put the fog, the super cool fog works well too. So, that's it. So them are nice, easy stratus, not changing too much systems. When you get to the convective systems, they're a lot more complicated, a lot more mixing, a lot more messy. To really understand and support that. Same with the hurricanes. Okay, so this video is not gonna work. Everybody see what a bit of snow we had this morning? What a bit of weather. Let me see if we can quickly, I don't have too many other videos, but let me see. We've been having some problems with our Met trailer. Had power outages in Fargo yesterday that knocked down a meteorological trailer. But I think I still have, let's see if my radar loop is working. See if I can pull that up. Is it working? Maybe not. Let's see. Today is the, what's the date today? 7th. Yeah, it must be working. So this morning, right? So UTC, 12 UTC now is 7 a.m. Keep getting mixed up with the time changes. So we had storms yesterday and last night here's the 1908. So that should be 08 local time. And with the composite refractivity values over North Dakota. So here's our North Dakota. Because we don't know geography anymore. Minnesota's over here. So they're still getting, 45 to dark green. So there's a light green there. You know, 40, 45. Oh, if I have that scale right. I don't think the scale matches with the, well, you gotta look over here. This is the latitude. This is the longitude for the numbers. This is a scale, so the greens here are up to 30 dBZ, which is where you start to get your falling precip. So nothing falling over us here in Grand Forks. So look at that. But go back and look at the the loops. Like to see how that moves in terms of the crowds moving down from the north. So they don't necessarily all move east to west, but generally we have the storms move, weather move to the east from us. So. Okay, I need to bring in some more radar data here in a couple next week or so. Okay, I got my speaker on recording. So today we want to talk about the actual seed material, getting a little bit more into the operations side and how we do the actual application of the seeded material, how we get it into the right areas of the crowd, and what is used. So these are examples of some ejectable furrows on the bottom of airplane, on the left, hygroscopic seeding furrows in the middle, and then AGI seeding material. So,
Dr. Delane?
Hey.
I think the screen's not showing.
Oh, yes, thanks. I need to share that. Thanks. Let me share the screen. Good. I knew I was recording with my Zoom, but I forgot to share the screen. So, I don't want that. I want my, okay, got my Zoom, and we need to share the screen. Okay, now the screen is shared. Everybody shared. Like I said, I need a checklist up here to make sure I do everything every day. Hide the controls. And now I gotta go, oh. Okay, now you can see it, right? Can't see it yet. Load up. So, yes. Yeah, I didn't post them today. I'll post them afterwards. So I was running a little bit late. So now that's a great thing that people know if we look at them when I'm going over them here. I'll post them. I was doing my shortcut today for that. So people like to look at the slides when I do. So I'll make sure to post them. And I post a lot of videos too. So a few people remind me if I don't get the right ones and stuff in there. But sometimes it takes me a while to get them posted because it takes the time to convert it. And then I don't get to it necessarily that day. And then I forget about it. So. But usually I get to it before the next class period. But so I'll post these, and we just have the ones for the seeded material stuff for today. Yes, so we go on to the goals of the materials. Produce large droplets or ice crystals in crowds. So that's the goal of what we want to do with crowd seeding. I got an or in here. You could do maybe and, because now we're doing some research and we're talking about trying to do maybe a combination of these at different times in the crowds, or put the materials both. Produce large droplets and ice crystals at the same time. So kind of get the large droplets going in and right away have the ice crystals in there once you get them, get cold enough, get the AGI material in there to produce ice crystals once it gets cold enough. Because it's hard to know exactly what the temperature is throughout the clouds when you're doing the operations. So, so to do this, you need some materials and equipment. So you want to have some considerations. Obviously, what's the objective? You know, some programs have very specific areas where they want to have precipitation augmentation. For example, over a reservoir, they just care about that one watershed. Okay. Others have areas for hail protection that is particularly counties in North Dakota, urban areas in Calgary, in Canada to do. Others have, let's have the whole country. You know, we're gonna increase precipitation, get it to rain, and we don't really care where it rains and get into the ground, help us replenish our groundwater and stuff. So obviously the other one is cost. And this is a big issue for orographical cloud seeding when you can do it from ground generators versus aircraft. The ground generators are typically cheaper. How do you deliver? What production do you have on this? And so here's my picture, some more ejectable AGI flares that we can have. So these are considerations of what we want to do. The talk a little bit about the types of materials that we put out. So I kind of been talking about this in general. Hydroscopic material, it absorbs or attracts water. So, you know, it just needs to obtain and, you know, have, I should say water, it's water vapor. You really want to pull that water vapor out of the air to form the droplets. And it just needs to be able to do that. That's what the hydroscopic means. Anybody know what's the opposite of hydroscopic?
Hydrophobic.
There you go. We fear the water, right? So hydrophobic. So there are certain materials that are hydrophobic. Or aerosols, materials and aerosols. So again, one of them is the salt. If you put salt in a humid environment, it just absorbs the water. Also known as sodium chloride, right? And got a bunch of hydroscopic furs on the back of a King Air 200 here. So the put my cursor over here. Hydroscopic nuclei is what we want to put out into the atmosphere. The objective here is to broaden the cloud droplet size distribution. So we want to get bigger or droplets so we have more broader distribution than we would naturally have. And the idea is to promote some coalescence and promote the technically the quizzing coalescence process mechanism, that process for forming warm rain. So this goes back to known the theory here. So we can have some common use materials with various mixtures. Sodium chloride is one, ammonium hydroxide. And then I think someone asked us, I mentioned this before, urea, which I gave the chemical compound formula. It's kind of, again, a common salt that is sometimes a little bit more beneficial. So these are the types of the particles. And they, you know, can disperse these different ways, which is how you generate them. So you have generators and ways designed to produce the seeding particles. You want to get a device to produce the seeding materials. They can be either liquid or solid. So one of them is to get, you know, solid materials, or you can have a liquid that you could disperse, or it can take up water vapor right away when it's distributed. Normally used for Graciogenic have generators that produce these. And I'll show you some pictures of that. And you can do them for hydroscopic materials. Vaporize the seed material. That's kind of the way we do them when you burn acetone. And typically when you vaporize, burn this, it's very hot. The seeding flares burn like 1800 degrees Celsius. You can get these materials out there. Questions? Hydroscopic, not quite done. The last thing is the requirements for the hydroscopic. Must generate, obviously, hydroscopic particles. And then we got to disperse that throughout the crowd volume. It's not useful to have the material not get into the crowd, and particularly into the bottoms of the crowds, because that's where you start to generate the bigger particles that get formed. So that's where the supersaturation goes the highest, is near the bottom. So you want to get and activate these large particles. So a lot of times the flares, I should have add a distribution of them, but we measure these. We can fly behind the airframe. We can generate these on the ground, burn them. The flares have big particles, but they also put out a lot of smaller ones. But the idea is we got to get some big ones out there. And the other idea now is a lot of times, instead of burning the flares, that you can generate a lot of small particles, you can try to just put out big super micron particles. But that's very hard to do in a burning process, because the burning naturally makes a lot of accumulation more particles, a lot of small particles. So we need to have a mechanical way to generate these big particles. So that's like slicing them mechanically, putting them out. And then it might be also advantageous. We talked about electrification and stuff. It might be advantageous to have them charged so that they can attract and nucleate particles. So part of our research we're going to try to do is generate large charged particles and see if that works better than just the hydroscopic flares. So there's always refinements to these techniques, but no one has a really great new one that's come out. So it's kind of hard, once you understand the basic physics, to come up with new ideas. So that's the end of right now on hydroscopic materials. the hygroscopic materials it can work on in the warm rain process, right? Because they don't need ice in the clouds. So I kind of, and it's a little bit newer process than the AGI in terms of applications and work. Questions? Yes.
Is it like, do they get set off by a charge from the aircraft, or is it all self-contained?
Well, I can, since you did that, I got a little bit of show and tell I was gonna save. But let's see if I can find my show and tell here. And then they go. I thought I bought it. Oh, I have a perfect accent for you. So we're gonna talk about the AGI ones next. So this is what it looks like when it's burnt. So all the material is gone. And these are on the holders. Now I'm gonna get my powder on here. So I got a bunch of AGI in the bag too to show you. But so these is one that is not, it's a new one, it's a 20 gram. So if you can see, there's a igniter in the end of it. So you can pass that around. It's safe like that. So you see there's a cord here, right? So there's two wires. So that's a small one, that's a 20 gram. Usually they have 150 grams. You can see the length of them, just making it longer. So they burn and it takes longer time. The longer you have them, the longer they will last. So that's.
Is there a point where they're too big to become an aircraft?
Too big. Not really to be put on the aircraft. What it is how long you want them to burn, because how long can you stay in that place and how long you want them to be effective. I'm gonna run into stuff. I better stay behind my bench here. So getting back to the other question is, there's two little wires on here. So we won't do it here, but any electrical current, direct current. So the way we light these off with the igniter is just hook it up to a 9-volt battery. And that's enough of a current to charge them. So we have done experiments where we burn them in my lab, and then we have to contain that, and I had to get special approval from the safety office. So
almost because of four of them goes away.
They're like 150 grams of them, and they have the racks hold. Let me see. Count them. I should know the number. 3, 10. And then these ones now have. Well, I guess you can see on each of them.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Well, these are double racks, right? On this one. Because they have now to get more of them on the aircraft, they've doubled up the racks. So here's an easier one to count on. And I should count so people online can see with my camera. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12. So 12 of them. I was close.
It was like 17 kilos.
Yeah. And then now they have what they call double racks. So instead of doing 12, you do 24. And then you put these on each wing of the aircraft. So this is the left wing, obviously. So you have the same rack on the other side. And typically what we would do is you burn one on each side of the airplane. kind of spread it out. So you're burning both of them for the hygroscopic materials. And these ones last about 3 or 4 minutes.
One flare or one
crack? One flare. So one flare lasts about 4 minutes. But if you're burning two of them at a time, you can count that up. So if there's 12 of them and it takes 3 minutes, that's only 36 minutes of seeding. Of course, your aircraft have a lot more endurance. But if you go with two of them, then you got almost an hour of seeding, and that's just with them. And then, of course, a lot of times you try to stay in the updrafts while they're going in, and then you try to seed different cells so you don't burn them, obviously, when you're going in between one cell and another. Because remember, how long do the storms last in the development? They don't last for hours, these ones. So a lot of times we would burn like three sets of them, so to seed one cell. Another question.
So I would assume like the pilots have a separate set of controls in the aircraft from switches to activate all these.
Yeah. So usually they have one person flying a plane, and the other person is the one that lights, initiates the flares. And then you can obviously check to make sure it's working because you got to hook these up. Hans, once we were doing some frying, and he forgot to connect up the flare wires. So it goes right the first flare, nothing happens. And he realizes that he forgot to write down it. So that's when, and he left Fargo and we're up in Grand Forks where we're seating. So he's like, okay, quickly need to land on the airport, go out there, hook it up, take off again. But of course that takes time. So you don't want to do that, but that's a safety issue, right? You don't want to have these potentially, because if you had some lightning or some discharge, you could have these go off. Yeah, usually the one that's not flying usually is the second. And then there's a bunch of notes and records that they have to keep too. But the FERS, I'll show you in the radars, it's automatically triggered, you know, like there's a mark when they ignite the FERS with a data system. That's downlinked to the radar so the operators can see that and see what they're burning. So there's different ones, you know, if you're, and each one of them is identified because that's the big part of the record keeping. So it's automatic, but I think they also require a backup to write it down. I think that's a lot of what Dan Brothers will talk about is the actual requirements. And then of course, you know, that's kind of specific to the program you're working on and the company and the operations for that. So, but it's, yeah, they have boxes. You can do that. And, but so they're up there by the pirates, and they just have a, and they've done it in different ways. They've revised and updated their procedures and the technology for that. And of course, usually you can almost always see if they're burning because you can look back. And no, because if you, like I said, you hit the button, it may not work. And sometimes the FERS, the igniters would not work. And they had problems with that 20, 30 years ago. They fixed them, igniters, so that they have less of a failure rate. But that goes back to the equipment and the knowledge of, because you don't want to have the equipment not work, but that happens. Okay, lots of questions. If you want, pass on the burnt line. I don't know. So we burn them. And okay, so hygroscopic. Anyway, go back to goitrogenic. So isoequilibrium must generate AGI small particles. So the particles must nucleate ice crystals. And again, it must be dispensed throughout the a crowd volume. So you want to, it doesn't help to just have one small area. You want to get a pretty big volume that you mix up. So with the ice nuclei, you want to maximize the number because it's the number of these ice nuclei that's important, not the mass. Okay, so this is one of the benefits. It doesn't take a whole lot of mass. It takes a lot of number of these particles spread out. Of course, you want to be cost effective and operationally effective in terms of wait time, operations, and how you get them out. So here's a picture of us over spring break where we burn some AGI, which is this white material. I don't want to get it all over you, but does anybody want to get it all over them? You can see the white. Get it on your hands. So here, take my hands.
So there. Anybody else want to look at that? So that's up here. So maybe not there. Maybe with AGI here. Now you really know.
So this is a powder in his suit. And I have a whole big bag of it. I don't want to get out, but it's pretty heavy. So I calculated out one time. This is it's probably worth about, well, I don't know what the price of silver is right now, but no, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars I got in there. So
Chris Pye bought it.
So you see the yellow here, and then we put it in the aerosol form. And we're gonna, this is a filter I didn't bring in, but you see the white that gets deposited on the filter. The yellow around the white filter holder. So this yellow here, you can see. And I need to talk to people in the Energy Institute. We want to go through and put it through the electron microscope, get some images of the particles and stuff. So need to look at that. Yes.
Are there other
Yes. The other one I talk about is bacteria, like Snomax or some type of dead bacteria. And so I'm working with a company in Austria, and they reminded me, I just sent an email today, we're going to try to set up a crowd chamber experiment to put it into the crowd chamber and see how effective it is. So the dead bacteria work well, or proteins that are associated with that bacteria that can also be there. So, but you have the same, but that's gotta, it can work better in fact because it can potentially have a higher activation temperature. So follow up.
Yeah, related to that, like how do you release the bacteria from the aircraft? Like, is it just-
There's a couple ways to do that. One is you can make it into a powder and dispense the powder It's kind of hard to put into like a flare. The other way you can put in a small droplets, you can just, but then you have to have some water dispensing system. And if you have the water, you add it into the mass for it. But they use the Snowmax for ski hills when they generate the blowers, or they did. Some places still do. You can put it in the water, and then when they have the generator stuff that make the snow, they just shoot out water under high pressure. And so it makes better snow crystals when there's Snowmax or bacteria mixed into it. So people don't like the idea sometimes of doing that, like in Austria. So what did I tell you what they did there? So instead of, they weren't allowed to add this dead bacteria to it. So what the scientists did was they went and sampled all the rakes next to the ski resort. And they found the ones that had the highest level of the bacteria, because it's like a soil bacteria. So they said, okay, you need to take your water from these lakes because you get better. Because it has more ice nuclei and you get better snow. So it's a question of, you know, sometimes you can do stuff, you know, naturally that you can't just add the same stuff to the water. And some people don't like AGI too, so they're allowed to use hygroscopic materials. But we know the myth, it's the silver iodine, because it's bonded, it's not hazardous on your hands or anything. But if you have pure silver, it can't be. That's the confusion. So this is what we measured. This is our generator setup that we had outside of Crickford Hall over spring break. This is one of a ground generator here. They use propane. They have a propane burner, burn acetone with a solution of silver iodine and some other compounds that are in there. And this is the burning part of it. And then we added this, usually it's open on the bottom. You suck the air up through it. It's just like a big propane burner. It's very hot, of course, but they have these all controlled now. The guy can control it from his iPhone. You can watch these run on the mountains. You know what's happening. You can look at the flow rate, how fast you're burning the solution. And so we were burning at different flow rates and different types of solutions. So they set these up in the mountain area. So a lot of times you can't get there. You have to take snowmobiles and put them there. So we just had this blower system that we would sample off of the stack instead of just releasing it. And then, of course, the other one is that AGI is a powder, as I showed you before. And it's a crystalline. If this is like a zoomed up image, maybe next year I'll have my own. I think I had some pictures before, but I didn't put them on here. But you can look at the crystalline structure of these. This is the activity. This is a little bit confusing plot here in terms of it's showing two different things. It shows the particles per liter here, which goes up here, and this axis here, and then simultaneously they measure the ice in a location. So we did this also, and it's easier to get the the measurements of these large concentrations of particles than these low concentrations of ice crystals, because you don't have a very big sample volume. So that's why they have these peaks and drops here. This one's a little bit more consistent. But this also tells you that not all the ice nuclei form, you know, a lot of ice particles. So at least the big ones. And I showed you the video before where we would put these in the crowd chamber, have out of droplets, and then they make the ice. And you can see that decrease of the ice, increase of the ice and decrease of the water. So the idea is how many particles you have to activate enough ice particles. You have to have them contact or emerge into the ice crystals, and not all of them do. So, and then this is at -20 Celsius to see how efficient they are at producing the ice particles. So the generators you need to design now have something to produce the seeding particles. So it can either be liquid or solid. You can dispense the powder if you want. You can put it in a liquid. I do this one already? Or maybe I went over this one already. Sorry. I need to figure out. Did I do all this? Yes. Wait, am I going the right way? Okay, where am I here? I'm sorry, 7. I'm confused of where we are. All right, let's start here. You haven't seen this slide yet. Liquid, use acetone for a hot flame. So you need to carry this in the solution. So this is one of the burners we have on the aircraft. And we use one of these burners a little bit. I didn't make a video, but I showed you a nice sort of video to show you a burning. You can burn these on the ground. You have a little igniter that you have to ignite it just like you would kind of your barbecue, your propane barbecue. You just need an electric igniter to ignite these. So that's one of the things, you gotta keep them clean and make sure they ignite. The other one is you can use pyrotechnics. That's the fancy name for the flares because they burn. So these are some where it's actually burning here, and you usually see the smoke from the plane. There's burn in place ones, or the long stick ones, and then there's ejectables, which kind of go out of the plane and ignite and spread it over an area. So them ones you usually put on the bottom of the planes. So that can be advantageous, particularly if you want to get up high and fast. I think there was a question earlier about like the Citation jet. There's some advantages to having a fast airplane to get to these material or these locations faster than with a slower aircraft, particularly when it's the systems develop very quickly. The flares, they burn hot, 2000 degrees Celsius. Some are vaporized. They quickly cool and form solid particles with very large number. That was a problem with sampling these. We had to dilute the airstreams because they generate millions of particles per really small area. So instead of having 10,000 of them, we have 10 million, and the instruments don't like that. They get clogged up. But once they get built in the generated in the furnace, they stick together, corroborate to form larger particles. And you know, this corroboration, and you can put them out and spread them out, and you get very large numbers of these particles, but it's also how many of these you have that are really what you want, which is the large ones. So they do increase it in size. So idea is that small ones really don't do anything more than what's naturally there. It's the big ones that you change and are important. Common materials. There's usually an oxidizer that's in the furs. There's a something to heat and burn it. Different materials that are in there. And one of the things I want to do in my research is we're going to add the indium trichloride to the furs for a tracer, for indium tracing. So you can add other materials to the furs. So that's what we did 2 summers ago, is we burned some furs. So we want to try that again and see if we can find the plumes in the cloud with a research aircraft above a ceiling aircraft and see what's actually happening, along with measuring the distributions and the size of the clouds. We really need to understand the natural process in different areas and how the ceiling might affect that. Particle yields, it's the corrugation sometimes, which for it's a stickiness. Once you generate them, you got them in very high concentrations. So if you put them in there, you know, it's not good to have a lot of corrugation for the small ice nuclei, but for the hygroscopic particles, you want to get them small ones to corrugate to make the big ones. And that's some of the secret, I think, in terms of better furs versus other ones. You don't want to burn a whole bunch and produce a very lot of very small particles. You want to have more of an inefficient burning process to burn bigger particles. Some numbers. Brownian corrugation, this means kind of like randomness, random movement of the particles. And then you can see, you have different diameters of the particles. So concentrations are given by N, function of diameter. You know, you want a lot of these big supermicron particles, but a lot of times you only get that as like 1% of the particles that you release to try to get the numbers bigger. So efficiency, number of particles per AGI produced in ice crystals at a given temperature. So this changes with temperatures and somewhat difficult to test because it's hard to know how many they're initially making. In terms of the ice nuclei, because it's such a big concentration, it's hard to measure, so high. So you have to dilute it, you have to measure the dilution. But this is what we do in lab chamber type of experiments to see how efficient it is, what it makes it at, what particles it activates to for this. So yields, here are some yields for number of grams per AGI in terms of this. And you can see the main thing is, you know, you get these orders of magnitude. you know, you go up from 6 degrees, you're at plus 11, but you go up to 8 and you get, you know, 2 orders of magnitude higher. Then you go up to 10 and you get another order of magnitude higher. So think about this in terms of the crowds, right? If you can go up to minus 10, you know, it's, you know, 10,000 times better than if you're at minus 6. So you want to, you know, but is the cloud there? You know, if the cloud only reaches up to minus 6, that's all you have. Okay. If you get to minus 12, it kind of levels off. So a lot of times you try to get right near the tops of the clouds because that's where it is most effective. As long as, you know, you have cloud at that level. So you can look at how many ice crystals per kilogram of material is released. So activity, you'd like to have something that produces a lot of them at the warm temperatures, form the ice crystal. Deposition, condensational freezing, contact type of freezing, so that you get them into the droplets first, and then you can have the droplet freeze. So that's the other thing. Sometimes you want to, you know, if you add the AGI to the material at the cloud base, once it gets up there, it'd be in the droplet, so you can form the ice crystals. So you can, you know, seed from crowd base, but the updrafts bring them up, as opposed to seeding right where you have the super cold water. So deposition usually requires large ice nuclei effective only at cold temperatures. So condensational freezing, relatively effective. So, and then you got contact type of nucleation. It requires high concentrations to act. So typically the AGIs are thought to act as condensation, where they do both condensation and contact type of freezing. And you can look and see how effective it is at both of these by looking at the activation in the crowd chamber. Does it activate as a contact or as a condensation freezing mechanism? Bulk freezing, nucleus may dissolve. So that's the activation forming the particles. So I guess don't think about this too much, but you can deactivate, not make them so effective. Loss of nucleation ability. with the sunlight. Usually you don't have that around with the clouds and the storms. The solutions could deactivate the Icenic Dry. So you want to always protect your material. So photodissociation, photodeactivation of the AGI when exposed, form gases. And pure silver is not an effective Icenic Dry, you need a silver iodine. So you don't want to break the particles off with UV lights. So, so radiation can dissociate that. But usually you don't have that problem, but you don't want to leave this stuff outside and expose it. There's a couple more activation rates. Speed of nucleation is critical. Rates of function of the formulation, temperature, liquid water. Contact freezing is, condensational freezing is fastest. If you can get it condensed into the particle, it acts very quickly. You don't have to wait till it impacts with a contact. And I think they have a couple comparisons of how it activates at different temperatures. I guess the difference here, it's hard to see on this diagram in terms of the different concentrations on the dots. 90%. So 90% activation time for a couple materials. And you can look at these in the lab. And I'm trying to hurry up, so we'll finish. I just put up the key summaries. Efficiency, activity, activation rate, speed of activation is the rate. Activity, number of active ice nuclei is a function of temperature, and number of active ice per gram of seeding material. So efficiency is number per gram, you know, how effective is it? Activity is how it affects with temperature. I'll leave that up there and let you guys go and start working on your homework assignment, which asks you to do questions up to today. And there's a chat here. Yeah, I didn't upload it to my website.
I just want to let you know that for the 28th test, I'm not going to be here. Okay. We're going to be in Drake. We're going to be in Drake Relays, Iowa for the track meet. Would I get a ticket earlier or later?
Maybe on. Will you be here on the following Tuesday?
The following Tuesday?
Yeah.
The test on Thursday, right?
Yeah, that's
I think I should be on here.
So the best is to either do it at 12:30 on Tuesday. That's probably the best.
I got a class at 12.
And if you have class at 12:30, how about after this class?
Yeah, I can probably.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you can plan on doing it,
yeah.
The Tuesday after this class.
The Tuesday after the test.
Yeah.
The class.
Yeah. Just remind me.
Yeah.
So.
Do you want to come to the class?